Blog Talk Radio.
Did you know there's a secret place to expand your mind? A place to escape the same old negative news? Welcome to Colombo Chronicles Live with Rose Colombo, award-winning author, cable TV and radio host, poet, and advocate for justice. Rose has been seen and heard on local and national TV and radio. She's consulted with victims of injustice for more than 20 years. Her articles have been published in major and local newspapers and magazines. Listen live as Rose Colombo welcomes prominent authors and experts to her podcast every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Time at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles. You can call in and ask questions at 646-564-9742. Follow Rose Colombo every Wednesday from 12 noon to 1 p.m. on Colombo Chronicles Live at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
Hi, everyone. This is the Rose Colombo. Welcome to Rose Colombo's worldwide podcast, Colombo Chronicles, right here for you, like the gentleman said, every Wednesday from 12 noon to 1 p.m., God willing. Today, I have two dynamic guests just for you. They are experts, they are counselors, they are interventionists on drug addiction, and the authors of a book hot off the press entitled Enableism. That is Enableism, Enableism. Are you an enabler, or are you seeking help to get off of prescription drugs or illicit drugs or alcoholism? Or someone you know maybe has a problem, someone you love, maybe a neighbor, a friend, a family member? Well, you are in the right place at the right time. I will tell you more about Bill and Linda Woodbury, the authors of Enableism, in just a few minutes before we enter into the world of authors and experts every Wednesday, right here for you on the West Coast of the greatest nation ever, the United States of America, with a great president of the United States of America doing great things for Americans, and he is definitely against drugs and open borders. And that's how the drugs come into our country, as everyone knows, except certain people. But first, let me enter into Rose's world of commentary, and today's topic is all about prescription abuse and illicit drug addictions. My commentary today is based on hard work and the great work of the DEA, the Drug Enforcement Agency. They risk their lives to save lives around America every day, especially the kids. And the following information is a published report entitled DEA 2017 National Drug Threat. And if you didn't know, we have a very serious national drug threat right here in the good old USA. This report was prepared by the DEA Strategic Intelligence Section, Drug Enforcement Agency, and it says illicit drugs, as well as the transnational and domestic criminal organizations who traffic them, continue to represent significant threats to public health, law enforcement, and national security in the United States. Drug poisoning deaths are the leading cause of injury death in the United States. Did you know that? Drug poisoning deaths are the leading cause of injury death in the United States. Who's talking about that? Well, our guests will be talking about it today. Drug poisoning deaths are currently at their highest ever recorded level. And every year since 2011, they have outnumbered deaths by firearms, motor vehicle crashes, suicide, and homicide. Now think about that for a moment. Higher than even firearms, it is all we've heard for the past 10 years on the left is pushing for gun control. But they aren't pushing for secure borders and for the wall to secure the borders, even though the drugs are coming through the borders and drug poisoning deaths are the leading cause of death in the United States of America. And again, they are currently at their highest ever recorded level, and every year since 2011, they've outnumbered deaths by firearms, motor vehicle crashes, suicide, and homicide. Now, this report was done in 2017, published in 2017. So imagine 2 years between 2017 and 2019 with the open border policies and people flooding into our nation unidentified and non-inspected. The only people who are getting inspected are the legal law-abiding Americans when you fly in and out of the country or state to state, or you cross near the borders. In 2016, approximately 174 people died every day from drug poisoning. The opioid threat, controlled prescription drugs, synthetic opioids, and heroin, has reached, as President Trump stated many times, epidemic levels in the USA, and currently shows no signs of abating, affecting large portions of the United States of America. Meanwhile, as the ongoing opioid crisis justly receives national attention, to some degree, I will add, the methamphetamine threat remains prevalent. The cocaine threat has rebounded. New psychoactive substances, known as NPS, are still challenging, and the domestic marijuana situation continues to evolve. In another part of this report on drug poisoning, I noted the graph, and drug poisoning has increased from 16,849 deaths in 1999 in the USA to 63,632 in 2016. So imagine with the open borders and tens of thousands of people in one caravan at a time, a majority of young healthy males not inspected being released onto our soil, what those numbers could possibly be today in 2019 or by 2020. Drug poisoning is increasing faster than suicides, homicide, firearms, and motor vehicle crashes, which make me wonder if the suicides, homicide, firearms, and motor vehicle crashes involve marijuana and other illicit drugs or alcoholism, which is a substance, or using one or more or in a combination of these substances causing other deaths related to drug poisoning. And despite all the information by intelligence, the DEA, within the Department of Justice, the left in Congress appear to refuse to believe the facts and statistics and call it a manufactured crisis at the borders, with knowledge that the Department of Justice, including ICE and sheriffs and Border Patrol, have identified dangerous, extremely dangerous drug traffickers from down south of the border, Central America, coming through Mexico, and even from China and the Middle East. Entering into the USA illegally, bypassing ports of entry, bypassing federal required inspections by law, as mandated, released into our cities, and aided and abetted and harbored by some politicians. So what can we do about it except make you aware of the problem and the reports from the intelligence community within our government who deal with drugs and trafficking, which leads to other trafficking, children and females, young females, being trafficked around the world, and most are never seen again, and no one knows what happened to them, which is a serious, serious problem in our nation today, because human trafficking is the number one multi-billion dollar business, along with the drugs trafficking. And then there's the gun trafficking and these secret societies and gangs and cartels and jihadists that the Department of Justice must deal with and risk their lives every day. Every day, 24/7, they're out there risking their lives. The Obama administration changed detain and deport to detain and release. But in my opinion, I cannot understand, to the best of my ability and knowledge, why Congress or the President of the United States can't just write an executive order and return detain and release from, return to detain and deport from detain and release with the stroke of a pen to save lives in America and help stop the illegal migration of millions. There's thousands, tens of thousands of people flooding our borders, mostly males. And that's been going on for 10 years. So Yale University professors did a study, and I believe these professors said there's between 22 million to 30 million illegals inside our country today who are unidentified, and we have no clue if they belong to a gang or dangerous gangs and dangerous cartels or other entities. So these illegals are entering from around the world. They are from third world nations, and they are entering into the United States of America without the inspections, as I said, by U.S. ICE agents and Border Patrol. And this is required by constitutional federal law. The protection of millions of unidentified illegals and trafficked women and kids who are also being brought into the USA, and fake families without inspections, is staggering. It's frustrating to the legal, law-abiding Americans, and dangerous, in my opinion, to every legal, law-abiding American, and in particularly the children. So on that note, I'm going to take a break, and I will be back with you in just a moment. So don't touch that dial. You're listening to The Rose, Rose Colombo, on Colombo Chronicles Live.
Keeping up with the news these days is like keeping up with the car. Well, you get the idea. There's a lot of yelling and screaming. Intelligent discussion, not so much. Ready for something refreshing, thought-provoking, and friendly? Okay, grab your favorite hot or cold drink, sit down, and listen to a friendly voice. The Colombo Chronicles Live with Rose Colombo on Blog Talk Radio. Every Wednesday night at 8 on the West Coast, or 11 for anyone sleepless on the East Coast, Rose Colombo welcomes dynamic authors and experts on a myriad of human interest topics, from politics to love, the environment, the mafia, healthcare, and more. It's 60 minutes of original entertainment and intriguing information with the top VIP guests. Senator John DeCamp exposing the Franklin cover-up. Dr. Tony O'Donnell, the herb doc. Dr. Alan Keyes discussing the White House. So, from Rose Colombo's home on the Colombo Chronicles Live to your home, Colombo says she doesn't want to have to send the familia to make sure you are listening.
Listening is an art. An art that humans are losing to the world of robots. Robots don't have any tone or human feelings. The addiction to communicate by texting isn't going away. People are feeling isolated, lonely, frustrated. People need people willing to listen to them. Can you imagine getting a text message that read, "You're fired," or "Hi, would you marry me?" It is happening. Colombo Chronicles is the option and the answer to human communication. Colombo Chronicles provides email access to your ideas and issues. Take advantage of this opportunity now. Go to ColomboChronicles.com. Click on subscribe today. Colombo is spelled C-O-L-O-M-B-O Chronicles. Fill out the form, submit it, bookmark and subscribe today. Remember the name, ColomboChronicles.com.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
Hi, everyone. While we're waiting for our guest to call in, we're having some technical problems here. Bill Woodbury and Linda Woodbury, the authors of Enableism. And speaking about illicit drugs and poisonings, there is a problem in the Dominican Republic, as we all know, if you've been keeping up with the news, where tourists have been reported dying after the majority in the news have drank a cocktail. And I was reading up on the drug poisoning, which includes alcoholism, and in those articles that I read, it stated that it could be due to illicit liquor, illegal liquor bootlegging, and that those are very dangerous alcohols to be ingesting, and that it could be a problem for the tourists in the Dominican Republic, although it still remains a mystery to the best of my knowledge. And so I'm going to keep track of that and see what the experts, the professionals, come up with on that particular topic, because it's summertime and people are vacationing into foreign countries. And so we don't really think about the drug poisoning related to alcoholism, because people are going to vacation on these islands or countries to have fun. They want to go out and party. They want to go out and dance in the evenings. They want to go out to a nice dinner. They want to have a nice cocktail. So it could be illicit liquor and bootlegged liquor that is being trafficked into these countries. So you just need to be aware and be careful when you're traveling in this day and age, apparently. So let's go on to our topic, which is drugs. According to the DEA 2017 report, marijuana remains the most commonly used illicit drug in the United States. The overall landscape continues to evolve. Although still illegal under federal law, more states have passed legislation regarding the possession, use, and cultivation of marijuana and its associated products. Although seizure amounts coming across the southwest borders have decreased in recent years, Mexico remains the most significant foreign source for marijuana available in the United States. Domestic marijuana production continues to increase, as does the availability and production of marijuana-related products. New psychoactive substances, known as NPS, the number of new NPS continues to increase worldwide. Think about that. The new psychoactive substances, according to the DEA report, continues to increase worldwide, but remains a limited threat in the United States compared to other widely available illicit drugs. China remains the primary source for the synthetic cannabinoids and synthetic cathinones that are trafficked into the United States. Now, Americans should wonder, how are all these drugs being trafficked, right? Are they being trafficked through airport strips that are in rural areas where there are no people around and no inspections? Are they being trafficked on the west and east coast of our nation and docked into our ports and concealed? Are our laws too lax? Are we doing proper inspections? Or is the majority coming through the open borders along Mexico and Canada? No one really talks about Canada, but it is along our borders as well. So these are all issues that Americans need to think about, because your children, your family members, your loved ones, your neighbors, and our fellow Americans are being affected by this trafficking of drugs into the USA. It also says that China remains the primary source for the synthetic cannabinoids and synthetic cathinones that are trafficked into the USA, and they have had access to our Long Beach Naval Base and port for 25 years. So heaven only knows, because at one point they were trafficking guns into the USA at that port and they got caught. So heaven only knows where all these drugs are coming from. The availability and popularity of specific NPS in the United States continues to change every year as traffickers experiment with new and unregulated substances. So on that note, I'm going to close my commentary on drug poisoning, which was reported again by the intelligence community of the Department of Justice, of the Department and DEA of 2017. And I want to thank them for that report. It is so intriguing and interesting. Everyone should read it and know what we're dealing with in our country and what the DEA and our Department of Justice is having to deal with, and their lives threatened by these dangerous gangs, jihadists, and cartels. So let's take a break, and then we'll come back and we'll enter into the world of authors and experts, and I'll tell you about our very, very special guests.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe, Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure, be sure to bring your appetite.
Columbo Chronicles Live. Columbo is on their trail. Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live.
Hi, this is the Rose. We're back on Columbo Chronicles Live, and we are leaving Rose's commentary for the day, and we're entering into the world of experts and authors. Bill Woodbury is our very special guest today. He is a CADC2 and SUDCC2, working in the field since 1988 in a variety of positions, including program director, interventionist, and Equinan assisted counselor. His wife Linda has a BA in human development, specifically focused on emerging adults, and has worked in nonprofit and faith-based settings since 1995. And combining their expertise and overlaying the theories of family systems and emerging adulthood, they are co-authors of a book hot off the press, In Ableism. Through relevant information and practical tools, the Woodbury seek to bridge the recovery gap between the family and the addict, which aids in supporting lasting recovery as well as leads to eventual maturity. While the book is geared towards the family members of chemically dependent emerging adults, it has broad application to any family affected by addiction. And I think almost every family knows someone, whether it's in their family or not in their family, or personally have had problems with addictions. And they are assisting in navigating the various transitions present in the first year of recovery. Bill and Linda Woodbury have been married for 30 years, are parents of two 20-somethings, as well as grandparents and two grandchildren and one grand dog for all you animal lovers out there. So let's get started and let's say hello to Bill Woodbury and welcome him to Columbo Chronicles. Hi, Bill. How are you today?
I am good. It's nice to be here. Linda sends her apologies. In fact, one of our grandchildren needed her today. We have a 9-month-old and her mother got called into work, so Linda got put into duty. So I'm solo today, but we did co-author the book together. I couldn't have done it without Linda.
Well, I'm glad that Linda is able to go help her child and her grandchild.
Yeah.
And that's part of being a grandparent, right?
Boy, it is. You know, it's setting those boundaries, but at the same time, being there when they need us. You know,
exactly.
It never changes.
No, and that's what I tell people. Hey, your kids are always your kids. I don't care how old they get, they're your kids.
Boy, is that the truth. That's why it's important to start early and set those boundaries. And then as they get older, you have the ability to forge those good adult relationships that we talk about in the book.
Yeah, sometimes they take a while. I think my kids were in their 20s when they finally decided mom knew what she was talking about.
Boy, is that the truth, you know? I totally agree. Yes, I agree.
So you wrote this wonderful book, In Ableism, that deals with substance mm-hmm. abuses, and most Americans have a family member or a friend who has a problem or had a problem. They know someone, whether it's currently or in their past, who may have even died from drug abuse. So what made you and Linda decide to work mm-hmm. in the field and write the book?
Well, about 30 years ago now, I decided I had been sober a couple of years, and I needed to find something that was more meaningful in my life. So I went back to school and became a counselor and started working in the field of recovery. And around that same time, I met Linda. She was attending an Al-Anon meeting, and I was attending an AA meeting. And we met, and we've been married for a little over 30 years ourselves now. And I've been clean and sober 32 years. So,
well, congratulations.
That was kind of what, well, thank you. In fact, my birthday, what they call an AA, is coming up on the 30th of this month. So I'll have 32 years clean. That's pretty amazing.
That is amazing.
You know? Yeah.
So
I've been working in the field for many years. And about 10 years ago now, I noticed a change in the population. I started getting different feedback from families. There was more involvement in the families, but it wasn't necessarily helping the situation. A lot of the addicts and alcoholic people that were coming into the program had been in many different recovery centers, but they were still being enabled and kind of bailed out, if you will, by their families. So things were starting to get harder to get the message of recovery out. And around that same time, Linda was working as a character education teacher in the school systems in Long Beach and going out and talking to parents and teachers about boundaries and learning how to set balance as far as bullying and the different things that was just starting to happen in the schools as far as awareness. So as I was working with these families and realizing that the problem seemed to be getting worse, I knew that we had to take a little bit different approach.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I was able to do, was to look at the situation a little bit differently. And wow, the parents are involved, but they're rescuing these kids and expecting things to change when they got home, almost like you would describe it as taking your clothes to a dry cleaners. They were expecting us at the treatment center to fix them and then send them back home dry cleaned and pressed. But the problem is, it was still there because the family system was not changing. And the behaviors had started in some cases when the person with addiction issues was very young and just had gotten older with the problems getting more serious, but the parents were still rescuing and bailing them out.
So in your book, Enableism, you discuss the late stage adolescence, also known as LSAs.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you mean by late stage adolescence for those of us who don't understand?
Yeah, and that's a term that is unique. I had heard it and kind of unpacked it, developed it. And what I saw was happening, we've known for many years that when a person gets addicted to alcohol or other chemicals, certain parts of their maturity level stunts. They stay emotionally immature. So we've known that. But what's happening over the last 10 so years, we have a generation that's come into treatment that has been enabled in many areas. Not just through their family, but in the school system, in sports systems, in many different areas. And they don't mature. So they were staying very adolescent in their understanding of life into their 20s. So they were acting like adolescents. So their parents still treated them like adolescents. So here you have a 20-something or a 30-something acting like a 15, 14, 15, 16-year-old, and the parents accordingly will act the same way. They will bail out, they will fix, they will do their laundry, they'll make their bed, they'll do all the things that you might do to an adolescent, to a child, if you will. And many times the parents would come to me and say, you know, my son or my daughter is in their 20s, but boy, I wish they'd grow up. And then I'd say to the parents, well, let's look at your behavior too. You know, where are you still treating them as if they're an adolescent? And that's where the LSA piece came in. What the late stage adolescence became a family system's response to immaturity. And there was no coping mechanisms.
Yeah, well, how about parents who are married, which is a novelty
mm-hmm.
today, parents who stay married, and and then the mother is the nurturer, and she still wants to nurture that child. And it's very hard for a mother not to do that. And then the dad is like, you know, you've got to stop that. And, you know, he's the tougher guy. And what happens in those situations? Because you must come across those parents.
That's a great example, Rose. What I've seen is they go to either end of the spectrum. You'll have the enabler on the one side, and we'll go ahead and say that's the mom. The mom in her natural state is rescuing, is still trying to fix the situation like you would a child. If my son or daughter got too close to the edge of something, you know, Linda would step in and keep them from falling off the step. And that behavior, if you will, translates into them getting older, but the behavior stays the same because, of course, the mom wants to save their child, no matter how old they are, from feeling any discomfort or get hurt or in some cases be put in a situation where they're incarcerated or left without a place to live. And then on the other side, you might have the wall builder, which, again, in your example, we'll say is the father. And the father, the only way they know how to show any type of caring or understanding is to cut them off at the pass and let them fall and bruise their nose, so to speak. But it comes at such an expense because then the parents start to argue. The other siblings in the family, they're confused. They're like, well, where are we supposed to fit into the scenario? So the entire family, when they go to these extremes, the solution doesn't get met. What happens is the problem gets repeated over and over again and gets worse. The consequences get so severe that the wall builder is just angry all the time, and the enabler is feeling totally out of control and responsible for everything, which is making them sick. So when you live in extremes, your body, your mind, your spirit, everything gets compromised. And the idea is to move it back to some family system that has the ability to stand the pressures of a family growing in a healthy direction, but not everybody running to the corners that they just naturally go to, whatever that may be.
I would imagine that there's a substantial number of divorces that end up because of drugs, drug-addicted children, or even a drug-addicted parent. And, I mean, it can go any which way anymore. So,
And you're right about what happens with the families, just real briefly, is everybody goes to their survival mode, which means the primary relationship, let's say, of the husband and wife gets damaged because the focus has gotten so caught up in the negative behavior of one of their children. The other kids that are vying for attention, they will act out in different ways. The whole system crumbles, and it's almost sadly natural that the parents are going to split up.
Yeah, and I think probably, you know, if there's their child ends up, unfortunately, in jail or passes away from an overdose, that the blame comes in?
Oh, definitely. And we know that in the death of a child, for whatever reason, the statistics of the couple staying together aren't very good. So you add the years of blame, and it's your fault, it's your family system. Maybe the wife says to the husband, well, your family's full of alcoholics, or, well, you enabled him, you did this, you did. So there's a lot of misplaced blame because of their own denial system. They're trying to minimize, rationalize, make sense of something that makes no sense. So, and unfortunately, there's no way to get education on drug addiction until you're in the middle of it.
Can I ask you an off-the-wall question here? Because
sure.
we have a major threat in the USA with drugs now, especially with the open border policies, and thank God for President Trump as opposed to it. But nonetheless, it isn't fixed. So, who's responsible for these children ending up on drugs? I mean, is it the parents? Is it the divorce? Is it the open borders? Is it the drug traffickers? Is it the legislators? Or is it a combination of just everything?
You know, Rose, it's a combination of everything, and what we've seen get worse over the last generation, what we call the millennials, are now what we call the emerging adults. There are major factors that have contributed not just to drug addiction, but across the board with the weakness, if you will, of many of the younger adults, the whole safe places, the whole intolerance to different opinions, all of these things all go hand in hand. But to narrow it down to the addictive behaviors, yes, it is the lack of, is there any purpose in life? Where am I going? I might as well just stay under the influence. Ambivalence is unbelievable with this generation. And about 30% of the parents are ambivalent to their adult children growing up and becoming independent. So there's across the board enabling behaviors, why I called the book Enableism, because it's across the board understanding or misunderstanding of our society. So yeah, and you have these incredible big farm, your drug companies that have been pushing opiates on our population to the point that now we are seeing deaths every 6 to 10 minutes. We now have some of these big farm companies now going into Suboxone sales and the different MAB, the medicated help assistance for treatment, which has a place, but it's being oversold. You have the drug cartels coming in with all of the behaviors, the human trafficking. All of these things are a societal breakdown that comes from this ism, this I, self, me, this selfish, self-centered schism that seems to have taken over in many areas of our country. And recovery speaks against that, saying bring the family together, bring some understanding of morality, some spirituality, if you will, into the family system, setting right some of those misconceptions. And it really has to do with survival, Rose. It's so sad that you watch these kids, the adults, really, they don't have any future, and they know it. At least that's what they believe. That's what they've been told by the media. That's what they've been told by their friends. And they lose hope. And when you lose hope, it sounds cliche, but you will go to dope.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you become a dope on top of that once you go to dope.
I have to agree.
No,
yes, you
offense
do.
To anyone yeah. out there, but, you know,
no,
get your
no.
act together, right?
Yeah. Well,
become,
it,
you know,
it, that's why they call it
a
dope.
Become a productive citizen. That's why I tell people, you know,
yep.
alcoholism, think about when you're opening that bottle, it's called spirits because there's some evil spirits
yeah.
ingesting into your body, you know, and it's nothing
well,
good
that's very true,
come
in
of
fact.
It.
No, and they actually, Carl Jung, a famous psychiatrist, called Bill Wilson or wrote Bill Wilson many years ago and said, do you know that the name for alcohol and the name for spirituality is spiritus? They're the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So
oh.
you're absolutely right. It is oh. it is a spirit that is a false hope giver. And that's what, unfortunately, we see across the board. Really, it started probably in my generation. I'm a baby boomer. You know, we've been tearing down the norms in society since the 60s to the point that it got very self-indulgent. And now what we're seeing is a lack of any responsibility or any right or wrong. And
or respect for human
it's
life.
Damage to kids. Yeah, or respect for human life. Right.
Yeah, it's no
and,
longer
and
sacred. The and they're not even respecting their own lives and their own bodies. And
mm-hmm.
with all of that feminist garbage that was put out there in the 60s and 70s and still going strong today.
Right.
And so,
well, you're
would
absolutely
you say,
right. Mm-hmm.
Would you say the two concepts of late stage adolescence and your emerging adulthood are put together in your book
mm-hmm.
is part of what assists families who are seeking help from addictions?
Yeah, definitely. What again, that collision of the LSA, the late stage adolescent, and then a lot of the families were saying, we just want adults. And we're trying to help the families in the book understand that there's an emerging process that has taken place. It started about 20 years ago, the emerging adult theory started being spoken of. Dr. Arnett and a Dr. Twenge down in San Diego and a few other started in the schools. The professors started noticing the lack of responsibility that their students were having. And they started seeing that carried over into their ability to succeed in life. So the emerging adult idea is that it takes longer to become an adult. It's joking, but it's true. It's like the new, you know, the new 20s, you know, are the 30s, you know. So it takes longer for various reasons. We see that in our economic problems since 2008. We see it socially. We see it in a lot of areas. Kids do move back in with their families for various reasons, not always negative ones. But when you put the whole picture out there, the emerging adult, it's taking longer. So the parents get very critical, frustrated. Their expectations sometimes create unnecessary pressure. On other ways, they enable and they keep them home too long. They don't allow them to emerge because of the ambivalence. They got all these things converging. And there are some wonderful books on emerging adults. Not so much in the addictive population. As far as I can tell, we have the only one out that actually addresses emerging adults in the addictive population. But just in general, we try to educate parents that it takes longer to go into adulthood. But they will do it. They will do it if they stay the course, if they keep the hope, if the parents set the guidelines and the boundaries, they will become adults. And the good news is, whether they're addicted young people or just people emerging, when they hit their mid-30s, if they've stayed in recovery, in a recovery-based lifestyle, stayed sober, got the help they needed emotionally, and got to school, got the education, did all the things they need to do, they emerge in their mid-30s and even sometimes late-30s, just like the other population. So it all averages out in the end, but the problem is the ambivalence. It's the misunderstanding of the truth that we're dealing with right now in 2019. It's different than we dealt with 30, 40 years ago. So we have to look at many different factors, not just addiction.
Exactly, because we didn't have we had secure borders and we had a pretty safe country. Not that we didn't have crime, but it was pretty safe compared to the rest of the world. Plus, when we grew up, we had boundaries. I mean, I went to Catholic school, and there were strict boundaries, and you didn't dare cross them, and or you got punished, and you didn't want to get punished, and then you didn't want your parents to know, so you didn't do it, most of the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also had boundaries at home, too, where you had to do chores and earn money and work and do things, you know, not just hand out a $2,000 computer to your kid because, you know, he wants it.
Right.
And so
well, you're right.
There's a different attitude today with entitlement.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, I think that's part of the problem, too. Do you believe that everyone growing up today or, you know, young adults and college kids think that they're entitled to top paying jobs?
Right.
They're entitled to $15 an hour to flip a burger. They're entitled.
Well, you do see that, and what that does is it doesn't create frustration tolerance. You've got to learn in life to be frustrated, to fail with grace, to get back up on your feet and try again. And that goes all the way back to youth sports that, you know, you'll see now where everybody gets a trophy. You know, there's no winners or losers, those kind of things. But as you grow and you not only is the family the entitlement bearers, we also see enableism in political, in the government. We see it in the way the system takes care of, some people call the nanny state, the kind of entitlement understanding that when you go to school, you should get the top computer, you should get this, you should get that. And there isn't any appreciation. I know in teaching in colleges, both my wife and I, being around young people, have seen some pretty wonderful things happen with kids that were very grateful to get what they've received. And we've also seen the other side of it where they want to sell the laptop they were given. They would want my wife to write their paper for them because they didn't have time because they were in a certain program at a college. You know, so there is an entitlement in the society in addition to in the family system. So it's hard to pin where, you know, if it comes from. I always tell people it comes from Palos Verdes, which is a pretty high-priced neighborhood, all the way down to parts of South Central L.A. You can be entitled wherever you're at. It depends on what kind of parental support, influence, whether or not you're getting boundaries and you're learning right from wrong, that
get
handed to you.
We can't really be role models if we're electing people who admit they use drugs into public office. And we can't teach young people, in my opinion, to that, you know, to do certain things by following the laws, because they tell illegals who enter our country and violate the law, and who don't go, not that we don't welcome legal immigrants, because we do and we always have, but a violation of the law is illegal, and we are a country of a rule of laws, so the government is telling them they're entitled to stay here, and despite the fact that they broke the law. So I can see how the kids are all confused about right from wrong, and then the broken homes, and et cetera, et cetera. So can you explain go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, in the next generation coming up, some people call them the iGen, this next generation, they're even more confused, because they have seen the millennial, behave in certain ways, and they're just going to magnify that. Like I said earlier, that's been going on since, my summer of love, which was 1969.
So what do you mean in your book when you say, well, I think you kind of explained here about overcompensating, but can you identify at least three forms of overcompensating?
Oh, definitely. We go into this very important, because we try to help families understand. We don't use the word codependent much, because codependent is hard to define. It's also one of these words, like many other words, we've used them so much they've lost all their meaning. So what is codependency? If I help somebody, is that codependent? If I, what isn't? What's love? What's codependency? And also another side of that is, I've seen the family members, they feel like a finger is being pointed at them. You're codependent, and it feels like you're being insulted. So what Linda and I, we do is, when we speak, when we go out and speak at centers or conferences or in the book, we talk about overcompensating. And again, the two extremes, one side is the codependent or the enabler, the other side is the wall builder. So the three examples, the first one does look a lot like the traditional codependent, and that's helping the families not overcompensate, but allowing their loved one to experience the consequences of their actions, to slow down a little bit and realize that there's natural consequences that are going to happen to someone in certain behaviors. You're not responsible to fix it. So don't go on autopilot and just react out of it and not think about what's going on in real time. So the first one takes the word overcompensating and says, the word codependency, and back it up and say, where are you overcompensating? Are you just getting a cup of coffee for a loved one, or is this a codependent act that you're doing? What is going on here, not what the automatic response is? And that would be the first one, helping the family get back to an understanding of that overused term, which got very popular in the 80s. It used to be called co-alcoholic, which was a little harsh. So then they called it codependent, but then we lost the meaning of codependent. It lost its meaning. The second overcompensating idea is going ahead and building that wall, moving all the way over to the wall. And sometimes, as an interventionist for many years, I would tell families, you do need to cut off your loved one. We need to get their attention, and we need to get them in treatment. But it's not meant to be permanent. Most families don't want to live in that kind of wall where they have no contact with their loved one. They would like to bring it back to some balance. So even though we may have to go there, it's not meant to stay there. And that offers hope for the families that are involved in an intervention, or feeling like they have to say no if their loved one got put in jail, let's say, or didn't have money to pay the rent, or whatever it is. It's not meant to be permanent. It's meant to get their attention so they mature and take responsibility. It's almost like many of my families, I see them running around with mattresses on their back, and every time there's a problem, they throw the mattress down to their loved one, so the loved one hits the mattress instead of hitting the responsibility pavement. And sometimes we have to hit the pavement and bruise our nose to get our attention. If people are always rescuing us, we never learn anything. And so the consequences get worse. and the mattress gets heavier. And then some parents will buy another mattress. So they're running around town with two mattresses or three mattresses on their back trying to rescue their adult from very serious consequences, you know, from prison. They're using all the money that they kept for college to pay for another rehab, and they've been in 15 or 18 rehabs. There's nothing new happening. It's just the repeating the behavior. So that's kind of the second idea of overcompensating. How do we stop running around rescuing, fixing, enabling, you know, them into this sense of entitlement? And the third is interesting because what it does, when their loved one starts to get help, there's a weird thing that happens to a lot of loved ones and parents especially. They start to miss the chaos because their addiction is the person that has the addiction. So they're addicted to control. So when they no longer have control, when their loved one is getting their life together, they miss the chaos. And the parents will say things to me, I have nobody to rescue. What am I supposed to do? I'm going around rescuing my people at work. I'm like, you know, stopping strangers and asking them if I can help them. I'm addicted to rescuing. And they become addicted to the control because they miss the chaos of the moment. So it's so important for the family members to get their own lives, to find their own stability. Maybe go to Al-Anon. Maybe get therapy. Go back to school. Get their own interests. Because so many parents today have lived their whole life through their kids. And now that their kids are adults, they have no life. They have no marriage. They have no interests. It was all poured into their kid. Empty nester is a fairly new phrase. You didn't have empty nesters. When a kid got 18, 19, they moved out.
Exactly. They wanted to move out.
They moved
they
out.
They wanted to go on their own in the past. Yeah.
My wife and I were never empty nesters. We expected our kids to grow up and go and leave. We raised adults. We didn't raise children. You know?
Exactly, and that's exactly the way it's supposed to be. You brought such an interesting point up that I've never heard anyone else ever talk about, is that the chaos, the crisis. I mean, we've all had crisis in our lives, whether it's from drugs, alcohol, whatever. And, you know, if not you, somebody else in your family or friends is in chaos. And it affects your life, too. And then you're trying to save them, and there's all this chaos and crisis.
Yeah.
I can really relate to that. And then it's like it's over, you are going, well, now what? What do I do now? You know, who am I going to rescue?
Who am I going to fix? Because if your drug's been removed, so to speak, if you no longer have that adrenaline rush or the chaos, what are you going to do? You're going to go into withdrawals. You're going to miss it, and you're going to have euphoric recall about the past, similar to the person trying to get sober.
It's almost
very,
like a loneliness.
The gap.
It's almost like
lonely.
A loneliness that the person feels, because it's like, well, you know, I was helping all these people. Now they're on their own, and they're gone. So I can totally relate to that, you know, because I've helped people before, and the chaos came, and this was years ago, but the chaos came, but you sparked a memory in my head, and then it was like, okay, now what am I going to do, you know? And so, everything you said was so invaluable, and I believe that people got so much out of this interview. I'd love to have you back and talk about some more issues in the future. Linda.
Yeah.
And thank you for your work and for your book in ableism. And now is your time to shine. You have about 60 seconds to give any message you want and to give your social media contact and how to get your book.
Great. Well, we really look forward. This was a good time for us to come and talk. Enableism is available right now on our website, which is enableism, one word. So it's enableism.com. And all you have to do is go in there and you can order the book. It has information about us. We send out the book to you in a few days. Our publisher is working on getting it on Amazon, but we've run into some glitches. But right now it is available through our website. Linda and I are also on that website. If you'd like us to come and speak at a church or an event with families, treatment centers, conferences, we love to talk about this because it has a broad application in addition to the addicted population that we talk about. So we have spoke at churches, we speak at community events, anything like that, and we are available to do that. So you can get to us at enableism.com, and that's the best place to go from there. The name of the company is Bridge the Recovery Gap. So Bridging the Recovery Gap, Enableism, is the name of our company. Enableism is a word that didn't exist, so that word now is with the federal government. We own it for 70 years. So it is our word. That was pretty
That's
fun.
Great.
Yeah, that was pretty fun. I got it on my wall. I got the certificate. So it
All
tells
right.
me I got a word. So yeah, enableism.com is where you can buy it. Yeah, it's great. It's a short book. It's written for families. I'm a clinical person, but I took all that out. It's short chapters. We have one lady saying I can only read a few pages at a time and then I got to put it down. But it's meant for people in crisis. It's meant for people that really are in the thick of it that need help. So it's a good one to send out to loved ones you know or make available. Some of the churches we know sell it in their gift shops, treatment centers sell it in their gift shops, you know, things like that. So we're just trying to get the word out. We'll go anywhere. We just want this information to get out because we're losing people every 60 seconds. And it's frightening what's happening in our country. We've got
it
to stop
is,
it. So.
Yes, and thank you so much for all the hard work you're doing
yes.
and for getting out there
mm-hmm.
and you know, and educating and enlightening and empowering people because no one wants to be on drugs after they get on drugs. Nobody does, you know. And
nope.
so they need mm-hmm. your help. And so thank you so much, Bill Woodbury.
Rose, thank
and
you.
And much success with your book, Enableism. And we'll have you back again in the future. God bless you.
Oh,
bye-bye.
All right. You take care, Rose. Thank you for your work also.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And Bill Woodbury has left the building. Be sure to get his book, Enableism. Go to his website. And you contact him if you want him to speak, and his wife, Linda, at one of your churches or community events. And we have to go, but God bless you. I'll talk to you next Wednesday from 12 to 1 p.m. right here on the good old sunny West Coast. Take care and stay healthy and be happy.
Rose Colombo is signing off, and she's left the building. Be sure to bookmark and share Colombo Chronicles Live every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. on the West Coast. Or if you're sleepless in the big city, that would be 11 to midnight on the East Coast. Rose Colombo says, remember, you're never alone when you tune in every Wednesday to Colombo Chronicles.